Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. This is Pop Culture Man Children. This is your one-stop shop for pop culture ephemera, talking about movies, TV, video games, books, sci-fi, fantasy, fandom, non-toxic fandom. This is a podcast that comes out every single Wednesday, and it has since the first Wednesday. I'm here today with my friend and yours, Nadia Cater. Nadia, how are you? Yeah, I'm just taking a drink of water.
So good. Yes. Sorry. I'm great, Mike. How are you?
No, hydration's very important. It's very important. I think in 2025 we should all try to hydrate more.
Is
Actually,
that your, I was gonna ask, was that your New Year's resolution?
no, I'm actually pretty good with hydrating. Do you hydrate well?
Only when I remember to keep track of it.
No, I'm a good hydrator. It's hydrate or dihydrate. You know what I mean?
Dihydrate.
Yeah. So today we're talking about an incredible film from 2024. I saw the TV Glow. This film is written and directed by Jane Schoenbrunn or Schoenbrunn. I'm not sure how they pronounce their name. When did you first see this movie?
I saw it when it first came out, in theaters.
Oh, you
Actually,
did.
I saw it three times, actually.
Wow, in theaters?
Twice in theaters and once for the podcast. So, right now it's on Max. So
Yes.
I watched it on Max.
I've seen it twice only on Max. I wish I had seen it in the theater.
It's a weird experience,
Was it a full
to see
theater?
it in a theater. The first time, yes. The second time it was like half full because it was a little later. But what really was fascinating about watching it in the theater is because it's a theater experience and you're in a crowd,
Yeah.
right? You're also somewhat affected by the crowd itself, and like how the
Yeah.
crowd reacts sometimes influences you. And by the end of that movie, people were so confused. And I was like, this is one of those rare experiences where myself as a queer person understands everything that's going on in this movie, and I'm surrounded by like cis people who are so confused and have no idea
Right.
because that experience that's reflected in this movie is not their lived experience. So it's like, wow, I'm not in a cis het white male world very briefly in this movie.
So,
So that was interesting.
while you're watching it though, are people laughing? Are you hearing people scratch their chins? Is there silence as people try to process it? Like, what's viscerally happening in the theater?
There, it was more like a hushed silence. Like people
Okay.
were really engaged, but like they weren't sure what was happening. And
Sure.
I don't remember laughter, but I do remember like the second time I went with a group of trans people. And that was interesting because so it was like our little section was like, oh yeah, obviously this is what's going on. And
Yeah.
then like I remember there was two guys in front of me, two cis guys, and they stand up at the end and they're like, what the hell did I just see?
It's so the yeah, let's dive right into it. So the creator of the film, director, writer is a trans woman, right? And we'll get into the story, but the story, most people read the story as being a sort of metaphor for gender dysphoria and the dysphoria one might feel if they, well, I don't know, if they, the main character kind of doesn't ever accept what's going on and kind of has a sort of tragic ending.
So it's kind of like, here's how I put it. It's like it's cognitive dissonance the movie. It's
Okay, yeah.
the character is it's right in front of, I'm gonna call Owen him, that's the lead character's
Sure,
name,
yeah.
only because this can get really confusing, especially since the character is unsure of his own gender identity
Yeah.
and they refer to as Owen the whole time, and he. So Owen is a character who refuses to see the reality of his existence of what the person he should be. So it's really like a horror movie for like trans and non-binary people. Like if you cannot accept the reality that you need and to work and be the person that you need to be, you're living a kind of in a not real world, and you're not fully
Yeah.
present. And so it's more like a horror movie. What happens when you don't transition?
You know, I think it was marketed, if I'm remembering the trailer, this is an A24 movie. If I remember the trailer, I feel like it was marketed as a horror movie. And as I was watching it today, there's scary things in it. But I found myself wondering, is it a horror movie? Or is it just defy genre? And what's funny, the genre is French for gender. So when we talk about genre film, we're talking about gendered films.
So I would say it is horror, but it again, it's more existential horror. It's
Okay.
not, it's more about what's the most terrifying thing that can happen to you as a trans person. In this, the reality of the
Yeah.
film is not, violence or death, but it is the death of the self, of like
Yeah.
you're not yourself, and you are constantly putting energy towards pretending to be someone
To be
else.
someone
And
else.
that is frightening. That is absolutely frightening. For queer people.
I'm wondering if you saw it from this point of view. There are some people, or there are some members of the discourse that are calling this analog horror, putting it along with things like Skinamarink. The way I thought about it today is if there's a spectrum of analog horror, on the least complicated end is the VHS anthology horror movies. Those are just horror stories that are all shot with video. And on the far end, really digging into the materialism or, the formalism of the genre, I think is this. This is on the other end of it, of really thinking about media and media's the way it constitutes and constructs bodies. And then in the middle is maybe like Skinamarink.
Okay. Yeah, I could see
I'm just
that.
pontificating.
Well, I'm thinking like the vehicle of communication primarily through the main character Owen and his only friend and the only person that sees him for himself, Maddie.
Yeah.
Primarily, a lot of their discourse or their interaction is through sharing these videotapes, and there's points. There's even the very end of the movie, the glow and the sounds that are coming, that one of the truly horrifying parts are coming from, like, it sounds like an old television.
Yes. Yeah. There is a the visuals in this film are absolutely gorgeous and incredible. And there is a visual motif of flickering lights, which brings to mind television. And there's also a audio motif of like static. You hear it throughout the film in different moments. I don't know if you noticed the high school that they go to is called Void High School.
I did notice that. So, like, the abbreviation is
It's
VHS.
VHS. Yeah. So in the story of the film, right, you have Owen, who is this young African American boy. But one of the interesting things in this movie is these two actors play from children to adults to old people, and they always seem like in the the same age. And I don't think that's a flaw of the film. I think that's part of the film playing or, being playful with form. You know, in the beginning, he's like the protagonist of the film is played by Justice Smith, who you might know from like Detective Pikachu or Dungeons and Dragons. He's like playing like a 13-year-old, and he's like, "Mom, can I go to a sleepover?" But he's clearly a man. Owen is this boy, and he's very, very isolated. He seems very close to his mother. He seems very distant to his father, who's played by Fred Durst from where's Fred Durst from? I forget.
Fred Durst,
Yeah.
he's a musician. He
What's the
did
band though?
oh my God. I feel
And I
like that
just
was
saw he's in VH, which is he's in Y2K as himself,
Limp
the
Bizkit. So that's like
Limp
that kind of
Bizkit.
metal. He's also very like in the 90s and early 2000s at the time of like rap metal was like a big
Yeah.
thing.
No, yeah, there's three more cameos in this movie of 90s people that are specifically cast because of that. So he's got this not great situation with his father, and he meets an older girl who's like a grade or two older than him, and the girl Maddie is played by Bridget Lunday Payne, who is non-binary person. They were in the last Bill and Ted movie. They played Ted's daughter. They're also in Atypical, the Netflix series. So they're really good in this, actually. They give a really good performance. And so Maddie's an older girl, and Maddie's reading this official episode guidebook of this show, this sci-fi kind of young adult show called The Pink Opaque.
I had a question about that. Like, do they? I remember episode guides that were a thing. Like, this was
Yes.
before the internet where you could find
Yes.
these forums and stuff. They don't print those anymore, right? Like, it's all
No.
online now.
No. No. I when I was watching this, I had that feeling of I remember things like that. People now, youngsters now would not know the idea of loving something so much, but the only way to engage with it is to tape it yourself when it airs. Synchronously on broadcast TV, or to like look at magazine articles or read these little books. Like, to love something that much, you're gonna read through the episodes. This movie
Yes.
made me think about the time before the internet, how powerful TV was. TV was the only portal from your home into a larger world, and now it's not that thing at all. But yeah, so. The Pink Opaque is so it's based on a couple things. It pulls inspiration from Are You Afraid of the Dark? It pulls inspiration from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. It pulls a little bit of inspiration, I think, from Power Rangers, even
Yeah, the
the
few times we
monsters.
actually see the show Monsters, it's
Yeah.
Power Rangers. And there is I text this to you like when we were deciding on this episode of like there is a little of Pete and Pete in that too. And
Yes.
the two men that played the brothers on that show in the early 90s, they have a cameo
Yeah,
appearance in
Pete and
this
Pete are in
too.
this movie. And it's not funny. It's a very weird cameo.
Yeah,
Yeah,
because they're kind of creepy.
they're
Like they're
just
just
standing there in front of his house when he comes outside.
Yeah, just like I think it's paralleling the henchmen from Mr. Melancholy of like the two moon people.
Oh, Marco and Polo.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
But
yeah.
there's and this is so weird. This is episode of Pete and Pete where Pete and Pete are like, they're kids, so like the big thing is summer vacation, and that's like the huge thing. And the things that they're focusing on are having all this free time, going to the pool every day, and ice cream. And they talk about the ice cream man and how he's this mysterious figure that no one knows who he is. It's so weird. And like they try to get the ice cream man, oh, I wish ice cream could come every day, but by trying to force that change, the ice cream man disappears. So it's actually not like scary, but the ice cream costume looks almost exactly like the real Pink Opaque
Actually
monster.
did not know
It's,
that.
well, I didn't know it either. I ended up watching Pete and Pete by accident a couple months ago, and that was the storyline of like, oh, and in the Pink Opaque show, they're like, oh, I wish we could have ice cream all the time and it
Yeah.
doesn't go away in the summer. I was like, that was a Pete and Pete storyline.
The first shot of this movie is we're looking down a street in a suburb, and it's nighttime, but it's actually a very bright night. I wonder if they actually filmed it day for night. And it's a sort of a bright blue night. And in pink, neon, very colorful chalk, there's scribbles and drawings on the road, the black asphalt. And up the road, in the like a long shot, in the very middle of the composition, is an ice cream truck. And that ice cream truck becomes a motif in this movie. You see it over and over again, and it's I did not I didn't I and I watched Pete and Pete, but I do not remember that episode, but that's gotta be what they're dealing with. It's also Are You Afraid of Dark comes from Owen is narrating this film, and in one of the sort of positions he finds himself narrating in is him sitting in front of a campfire, which is how Are You Afraid of Dark always began and ended.
You know what's really creepy about that though is like I didn't notice until this time, again, the third time, is Are You Afraid of the Dark? The concept is all these kids come together late at night in a park. They are around a campfire and they tell each other spooky stories, and that's how they like relate to each other and you know like bond. And Owen is by himself. And he doesn't narrate the whole film. He only narrates parts of the movie. And when you're first introduced to him, he says something along the lines of like, well, it was dark and it was raining, so I decided to put on my old favorite show, The Pink Opaque. But the way the narration is set up is you're seeing him in front of the campfire. So it's actually setting you up to, and I missed it the first times I read it. I watched this movie. It was like the first, it's setting you up that Owen is an unreliable narrator because he's lying to
Oh,
you the first
that's
time
so
you,
true. Oh,
yeah.
wow. That's really good.
But
I
again,
love
I
that.
saw this 3 times, so that's what, and I just
No,
watched it today, so.
right. It's so dense. And it's all the time that it airs in the film would be Are You Afraid of Dark time? Because what do you call it? He asks Oh, little Owen asks Maddie, isn't that a show for kids? And she says, she has actually a really funny line. Yeah, it's on the Young Adult Network, but it's way too scary and the mythology is way too complicated for most kids. But they say it's on 10:30 on the Young Adult Network before it goes to black and white reruns, which is what that was where Are You Afraid of the Dark was. It was the last show on SNICK before it would go to Nick at Night reruns.
Yeah, and it would show like I Love Lucy and stuff like that. So yeah, that was really interesting. And there's so much, the obvious parallels to Buffy were really big, but I was surprised by how much Nickelodeon stuff was in this.
The Buffy parallel. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, the Buffy parallel is obvious, it is valid, it's there. But it's like, imagine if Buffy had a quarter of the budget, and like that's what the Pink Opaque was like. And those Nickelodeon, if you watch Pete and Pete now, like, and I watched it this year, like I told you, and that they had like no money, and Are You Afraid of the Dark? Very little money. So like, seeing how corny it seems is because they had very little to work with. So there's those similarities. It's also there's a part with this is a little later, but when the main character is taking that midnight juice and they're going to sleep, that
Luna
blue,
juice.
yeah, the Luna juice and that blue stuff coming out of their mouth, that's from an Are You Afraid of the Dark episode called The Ghastly Grinner, which is about a comic book villain that's like a jester
Oh,
who
yes.
injects blue stuff into people, and then they start, you know, like spitting out this blue goo out of their mouths, and then they're like taken over.
Wow. Yeah, you get the feeling that, like, this film was inspired by. And I don't know if this is the truth, but you get the feeling like the creator of this film was too young and saw some images on TV and it scarred them. Like, you know, like when like you're a kid and maybe you shouldn't be watching something, you see an image from an adult movie or whatever, and just something about it is so foreign to you, it like sticks with you. That's sort of how that vibe is throughout this whole movie.
Yes, that's how, you know, it's funny because that's how I felt about Are You Afraid of the Dark? Like, I did watch it, but there were some episodes that creeped me out so much as a kid that I didn't watch them when they aired on reruns. And then years and years later, now as an adult, and they put all that stuff on Paramount Plus, I saw some of those episodes and I'm like, why did this scare me? Like,
Well, it's fun. Well, that's like later on in the film, towards the very end, to jump to the end, Owen talks about as an adult, he streams the Pink Opaque and he's like, it's not at all what I remembered. And it's just this cheesy kid show.
yeah, and it's like I feel embarrassed watching it as, and he at that point he's like in his 40s, so the
But he's
film
also very,
spans.
he's very much at that point stuck in the prison he's made for himself.
Right. The movie, like, it jumps time a lot,
Yes,
and
it does.
it's 1 hour and 40 minutes, and it does have some slow burn moments, but it really, if you think of it, spans the whole life of this 12-year-old child who in their like 40s.
I think even later. I mean, it's hard to tell at the end how old he's supposed to be, But I get the, but he, well, it gets into a whole nother thing.
Well, he looks awful too.
Yeah,
Like
he
it's
looks
just,
terrible. Right. So is he old or is he suffocating?
I think it's he's suffocating because also that's a thing that comes back in this movie is like he's wheezing
Asthma.
more and more. Like his
Yeah.
asthma is because he's under, he's
Yeah.
not breathing right.
Okay.
I did have one thing to say about
Yeah.
this movie that I thought was really interesting is so what you said earlier about the internet, right? And how, or the television was the one way that people or young people had access to the world. And that is very true for queer people. And so queer people only had television and, when you go to the movies, but television was your constant. And there wasn't queer characters. So you had to project and identify on characters that were either coded as queer
Yeah.
or they weren't really queer, but they were different enough from
Yeah.
what you call normal or heteronormative people that you could identify. It's kind of like the Daria effect. Like people would watch Daria and she's alternative and sarcastic and isn't really family oriented. And like people would project that queerness on her, even though the
Yeah.
character herself was never queer. And
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
what
yeah.
happens. That's what happens in this show. It's like Maddie and Owen watch the show because they see themselves in these
Right.
characters.
I haven't said yet that young Owen says to his parents that he wants to watch it, and his dad, played by Fred Durst, very stoically is like, and he's driving with that stoic dad face, and he just turns his head slightly and he goes, "Isn't that a show for girls?" And he doesn't answer. And from that point on, he wants to watch it, but he senses that his dad wouldn't want him to and that he's not supposed to. And that's, I think, a big thing here. And Maddie is like, "You could come over to my house and watch it." So he tells his mom he's going to sleep over this boy's house, this friend's house, which he doesn't really sleep over. He goes there, but then when the mom drives away, he goes to Maddie's house and they watch The Pink Opaque. And I gotta say, even though this is a very uncanny, spooky, scary movie, I found Maddie's basement to be so cozy. Because you notice, this movie, I'm a cisgendered guy, but I still get a lot out of this movie. I still identify a lot with this movie without being genderqueer, because I understand what alienation is, and I certainly understand what depression is and what escaping that through media is like.
Oh yeah, there's definitely, even though like this is very much like a trans and queer story,
Yeah.
there's stuff here that people can really identify with that alienation and those and lying to your parents and trying to put this front of who you are. I
Yeah.
think everyone's gone through that at some point.
Yeah.
And that's
But
Fred Durst's only line in that movie.
yes.
And
Yes.
it's and in one line, that character demonstrates everything that you, the
Yeah.
fear, the discomfort, the complete total control and
Yeah.
emotional neglect. So
Yeah.
it's really fascinating.
Yeah. Yes. But her basement, I know base I remember basements like that with the rug and the fish tank and the fucking we're hanging out and watching TV and just the soda cans. Like I was like, I know this life, I know this world. I know fucking I used to watch SNICK. You know what I mean? Like I knew that I fucking knew it. And he goes, spends the night with Maddie. We learn that Maddie's father is, or stepfather is abusive physically. He then says, or Owen then says that after that first night, he felt so like nervous or whatever. He couldn't bring up the nerve to speak directly to Maddie, but Maddie started giving him VHS tapes of the series, and that's how he watched it. He watched it all through the VHS. And there's this really great shot that's a long, long length shot where it's Owen, it's from behind, which we're tracking Owen, and he's walking through the hallways of his high school. And oh, it's probably Steadicam, but on the actual image on the composition, we see this pink is the pink and blue are the two big pink, blue, and purple, the big colors we see throughout this movie. we see in pink writing all of this like scribbling and writing and episode this, episode that. And I think it's notes that Maddie's leaving on the VHS, but it's being written for us on the actual composition on top of the image of him walking. And he's just walking, and then he walks past these kids that seem to be just not bullying him in any way, but they're just there. And he sort of slows down around them. But then he walks through a door, and he's in like one of those like those like tunnels between one building and another that you see like in schools. Once he gets past those guys, he's walking with more confidence and with more ease, and the windows have a pink sheen, so there's pink light coming in. It's just the visuals in this film are just so incredible. It's such an iridescent movie. It's such a neon movie. It's such a beautiful, incredible movie.
The attention to detail is incredible. You like just like the shot you were talking about when Owen's walking through that hallway, there's all these like stupid school what did they call those? Like cork boards that would just have nonsense saying on it, like the hardest day was yesterday, carpe diem. That means literally nothing to a teenager, but they're everywhere, and he keeps passing them and passing them, and there's even a dare poster at one point, and he just keeps all this bullshit, and then the pink is where he can be himself. And that's the thing that comes up in this movie so much, like the blue and the pink, which are very gendered colors now, and are a part of the trans flag. When Owen is in pink or wearing pink, it's almost always with Maddie. It's like he can only be his true self with her. And the blue is when he's like hiding himself.
Wow, yes, well observed. So diving back into the na it's pretty simple narrative, but diving back to the narrative, now that he's a little older, he does hang out with her again. He meets her. She had one friend, and that one friend is gone. And she is now identifying as liking girls, because he says, like, I could come over and sleep over and watch the show with you again. And she's like, you know, I into girls, right? And then he's like, okay. And then she says, like, are you into girls? And he's like, I don't know. And then she's like, are you into boys? And he goes, I think I'm just into TV shows, which I think is such a brilliant thing. Some of the dialogue in this movie is so good. And then he starts to get into this metaphor that continues throughout the film of like inside of his chest. When I think about that stuff, this is a quote from him in that scene after she asks if he likes boys and girls. When I think about that stuff, it feels like someone took a shovel and dug out my insides. I know there's nothing in there, but I'm still too nervous to open myself up and check. I know there's something wrong with me. My parents know it too, even if they don't say anything. And then she says, maybe you're like Isabel, afraid of what's inside of you. We haven't talked about the show in the show Pink Opaque, right? It's about these two girls, Isabel, who's African American, and Tara, who's white. And they only meet in person in the pilot. They meet at summer camp. But they have this deep connection, and they both have these, I don't know how kids would have a tattoo, but they both have these two pink tattoos of ghosts on the back of their necks. And those tattoos allow them to communicate with each other. And through the rest of the series, they're never with each other physically, but they communicate, from different parts of town through their connection, and they fight the forces of evil. The big bad, as they refer to him, which is very Buffy discourse talk, is Mr. Melancholy, the man in the moon, who's this very scary man. Think of Trip to the Moon, the Méliès film. Like it's a man who's got a moon face, and his name is Mr. Melancholy, and he's sort of like the Rita Repulsa, if this is Power Rangers. He's sending monsters of the week every week for them to deal with. And Isabel is the more timid one. And clearly they see connections with these two characters.
Yeah, they kind of project on themselves. So like Owen sees himself as Isabel, so this kind of shy, sort of a little demure, but pretty girl, who's very feminine. And Tara is a kind of more masculine figure, like
Yes.
wearing leather, has slicked back hair,
Very
and
Buffy. Like she makes a there's a really scary part with a clown, and she comes out and she says like some quip that's very what Buffy would say before she kicks somebody's ass.
Yeah, and there, I think that's also the scene where, so we're seeing the show, and then it cuts to Owen and Maddie watching it. And
Yeah.
even though Tara's saying something so corny and like, fighting a monster clown, Maddie is in tears and having like the severe, like
Yeah.
emotional movement of this corny kids show.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed this, but when Maddie and Owen talk to each other, a lot of the time, especially when they're saying something really vulnerable, they're not actually facing each other.
Yes. Yes. I also think that Owen does this thing where he sort of like chokes out words. Like almost any expression is too much for him. Like he'll say something, but he'll be like, "Oh, pass the ketchup." Like that's not a real thing he says, but he'll say something like that. But it feels like he's just like throwing the words out, and there's no expression on his face. Like it's somehow everything he says feels performative.
Yeah, I was thinking that. And also, even his voice sounds like he's trying to force himself to sound more masculine.
Yes, he's constantly modulating. Yes, absolutely. And at that second sleepover, Maddie draws the ghost on the back of his neck, and she has one on the back of her neck, and then she says she's going to run away, right? She wants to run away to a different place, and she invites him to come with her, and they can't tell anybody. And we get the feeling narratively or within like the plot is she wants to run away. Because her stepdad's abusive, but also it's like she feels this alienation. And then they're like sleeping next to each other, and Owen is awake, and above his head, like floating, is this like orb of light that like is flickering and has like the lines in it like television. And it's almost like a mirage of TV. TV, right? Just quote TV. Exists in this film almost as like an element. Like there's a part where he throws up TV. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's so imagine like someone laying down and above them where like like in Star Wars you might see like a hologram, but it's not coming from anywhere like in Star Wars. It's just almost like the world ripping open, which is I think kind of how you could read what's happening. Like the TV world is somehow the real world. For them.
Yeah, well, it fits like what you
Right.
were saying about how like this was the only window into the outside world, especially of like you and I grew up in the suburbs, and that's a current theme in the show too, of like the reality of the suburbs isn't actually the reality, and it's like a moribund existence. And so that intimacy of like Maddie drawing on Owen's neck, and even when they're sleeping next to each other, that's the first time they do that. Maddie always goes upstairs and leaves Owen in the basement. So there's this almost like sexual thing there, and he's absolutely frightened of it. There's flashbacks of scenes that we don't always see, but we only see in those little flashes because Owen's suppressing them, of Owen in a dress. And you know, there's one, I don't know if you noticed this, but there was one part where when Owen first comes out of the bathroom in a dress, you don't actually see him coming out. You see it in a mirror, and we're only focused on Maddie. And the look on Maddie's face was at first like shock and pleasure, but she also smiles and looks down. And it's like, I think she was attracted to Owen.
Oh, wow. I did not read that at all.
So I
That's
saw
really
Maddie.
interesting.
Yeah, because Maddie, I think, is a lesbian. Well, Maddie is a lesbian. She says it. She's a lesbian. And Owen, if Owen's a trans woman, then like she's attracted to Owen as a woman.
Wow. I did not get that at all. This is such a great conversation for me. Wow, that's so wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, there. Well, the one of the first times we see a glimpse of him in the he's wearing like a pink dress. Then there is like it looks like the end of a film reel. Like if you ever saw Fight Club, there's a whole point where he talks about like it looks like a cigarette burn, and that's how the film reel would end. You see that. See, that's one of the interesting things about this whole like analog horror genre, which is that from our contemporary digital perspective, we now conflate videotape with film, which is interesting because videotape is definitely it's definitely technically analog, but I think it's a step towards digital, because analog, like a wax record, is, sound waves are being recorded onto the wax, and the wax, the needle is moving up and down in the wax and creating the waves, and then you can play it back. Or a photograph is, it's copying what your eye does. It's letting in light and pre like it's called analog media because it's an analogy of some actual sense you have. But video is not that. Video is magnetic tape. Like if you open up a VHS, you don't see frames like the way you would with a film. You see nothing. It's on there in this other weird way. So it just that this is just, I guess, my age talking. It's interesting to me because I think of video, even though video is and VHS is so, like, now it's this big part of this analog culture and collecting VHSs and stuff. And that movie Y2K, with also with Fred Durst, directed by Kyle Mooney, is a, I think, very much, even though it's a comedy horror, I think it fits into this genre. It's all very obsessed with tape, but tape and film, I always, when I was younger, we thought of tape and film as very different, but now they're seen as very similar. That's just me going off on a rant.
No, I love it. And the technology, I really appreciate you bringing that out, because we're in this weird age of, like, now there's that nostalgia for VHS in the last couple of years that we haven't had before. And so there's all that callbacks. And I remember when we did that Kyle Mooney's Netflix show, and it sometimes it felt like we were watching VHS tapes of a recorded kids show.
And I think this movie reminds me a little bit of Kyle Mooney's first movie, Brigsby Bear, about the, which there's also an episode of PCMC that way I talked about it, where he's a kid that was kidnapped and grew up in like an underground bunker, and his mother and father made a TV show for him. Just for him, and made him VHSs, and he became obsessed with it. It was like his only outlet into the world. It was the only art he consumed. And then when he comes out, he's like, when he leaves that world, and comes into the real world, he misses that outlet. That movie's great. Y2K, I was very disappointed with, to be honest with you. I was like, ah, because I love Saturday Morning All-Star Hits. We did it up, you and I did an episode on that. I like
That was
Kyle Mooney.
great.
But yeah, it's a big, it's a big thing now, VHS.
So do you think it was like, I know we're talking about a different movie, but I'm curious about your feeling about Y2K. Do you think it just didn't work out, or do you think there was like studio interference or something? Because you know
I
that
get
fucks
the
things up.
feeling, I get the feeling that as weird as it is, it's probably the most mainstream Kyle Mooney can be. And it doesn't work. I think you can't dilute Kyle Mooney because it felt, like it just lacked ideas. It felt like thin, which is like not him. You know what I mean? Like I found myself being like, God, this needs more everything. It needs more jokes. It needs more character. It needs more story. It needs to lean into its more weird parts. And I wonder, maybe there's a version out there that's more like that. I don't know.
Or maybe this is Kyle Mooney selling out.
Maybe it's worth. It's worth taking a look at. I want to hear your opinion on it.
I'll get to it.
So he, much like the way he ran away when he was a kid, or when he stopped seeing Maddie after they first hung out as a kid, he gets scared again. He packs his bags like he's going to run away with Maddie, but then he does something weird. He goes to the house of the kid that he says he sleeps over, and he rings the door, and the mom comes out. And he's like, can you gotta tell my dad I was gonna run away, but I can't, and then I don't know what to do. And then this girl Maddie's running away, and the mother's like, oh, okay, it's okay, oh, it's okay.
It that was so heartbreaking.
Yeah. And the mom, yeah.
Oh, well, I was gonna say, it's like he chickened out, so he's like, I need to tattle on myself, and he tattles
Yeah.
on the mom, who is Tara from Buffy.
Right, it's played by Amber Benson, who played Tara in Buffy.
And you could see, the thing about that, like you mentioned, the actor who played Maddie was really great. I think all the performances are really
Yes, I agree.
excellent. Owen is fantastic, but I also think that one little bit with Tara from Buffy was really strong, because you could see in her face the changes of listening to Owen blubbering and freaking out. First, she's confused. And then she immediately goes into mom mode, like, I'm gonna take care of you and do what you need, which Owen's mom has cancer and is in the hospital. So it's like she knew she had to give him that, like, in that one moment. And it's so heartbreaking.
And his fear is so heartbreaking. The fact that he, you know, like a screenwriter, if this were a screenwriting course, the professor would say, no, Owen has to like have a stake in what he's doing. But no, things just happen to Owen. Owen really runs away from the call to action. Owen is scared. Owen's super, super scared. And he apologizes for everything. Very early on, he apologizes, and Maddie's like, don't apologize. But that's what he does, and that's how the movie ends, with him apologizing, very sadly. We find out through the narration that Maddie did run away and disappeared, and no one knows where she went. They presume she's dead. His mother died. When Maddie ran away, all they found was her TV in the backyard on fire. And there's this amazing, evocative image of it's nighttime and there's people in the street standing around watching a burning television set. And then he says, and the same month, the Pink O'Pake was canceled.
Yeah, that was so fascinating. So, how did you read that?
Which part? The visual or what?
What happened to Maddie? And the visual, sure, yeah.
I tend to take literal what Maddie says later. I do think that they are actually, their real life is the show, that they really are Tara and Isabel, and this world where they're stuck as Maddie and Owen is all just a ruse put on by the melancholy man. I believe it. I believe her, and I believe that she did find a way to go into the other world.
Okay, that's fun. So there, for first, I'm going to talk about one interpretation that I read online that I don't agree with, is that Maddie committed suicide, and her coming back later is more Owen's internal trying to come to terms with being with what's the reality. I don't take it as she
I
killed
don't
herself.
like that.
I don't like that idea. It's a bummer. I take it as she actually did run away. And to be a gay person in real life. And her burning the television set was more like, I am ending the split of my life. I'm not going to be a secret gay in the basement and then be a different version of myself for other people. And so I took it as like the pink opaque is really, and even the term pink is very coded as, homosexual and queer. I think
But
she
then
just went off.
opaque is something that you can't see through.
Yeah. See, that's
So
where it gets a little weird.
even the terms pink opaque is so interesting together.
It's almost like a, I know, I see it as almost like a veneer or like a miasma of just this bright color. And you don't really know what's in it, but you know that that's the gay part. That's where you want to be. So.
But do you think when Maddie comes back, because we do a time jump 10 years and now he's a young adult working in a movie theater with Connor O'Malley from I Think You Should Leave, she comes back and she says, you know, well, they get into the final episode of the show. She basically says that I went into the other world and I'm really Tara. Do you think that she's crazy, that she's schizophrenic, or do you read it as that's true?
Okay, so here's how I read it. I read it as that she never came back. That seeing Maddie again was Owen's sort of internal subconscious trying to force the conscious mind to accept reality and live as the real self. And that was the last breath of that before we get through the rest of the movie and he's still living that existence. Because
But you don't think she's dead. You think she's just out there.
I think she just left and moved on, moved away from the suburbs and left her old life behind because so much of what she tells Owen, not just the not the explainer parts of where I've been and what my life looks like. I think Owen made that up of like imagining where Maddie could go because so much of her dialogue after when they go to that punk bar and she's like, "Oh, I've been gone, but I'm back." And I was in the pink opaque. I think that's him just trying to come to terms with his queerness, and his queerness is the show and her. That's the only time he's ever experienced that.
I think figuratively, that's what the art of this movie is doing. But I think narratively, she's for real. I think narratively, this is a horror sci-fi movie, fantasy movie. But
But
its
so much of what
power.
she says is the same stuff she was saying before.
Yes,
That's why
yes.
it's like, how could someone leave for 10 years and be the same person, essentially, but slightly better?
Well, she
That's
says that
why.
time moves different in the other world.
But she even says she goes through different phases. Like she gets a job
Yeah.
at the mall and
Yeah.
she buries herself again. And
Yeah.
she keeps repeating the same shit. That's why I
Yeah.
was like, that's why I think it's just Owen projecting, because she's
Interesting.
not saying anything about the other life. It's more like, I tried to leave, but I'm still stuck, so I had to bury
Yeah.
myself again, and then I came back for you. And imagine that as like the only person who in your whole life has ever seen you for the real
Yeah.
you, and they come back to save you.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's like his reality. And you know, everyone has their own interpretation, but like, I think that's his desperate attempt to try to be different, but he can only be different with her.
Yeah.
And without her, he has nothing. Her in the show
Right, right,
specifically.
right. All right. So for people listening, we and I imagine if you're listening to this, you've either watched the movie already and just want to hear some discourse on it, or you're not, and we're just ruining it, which is great. Go and watch it anyway. But to add some clarity about her burying herself. Owen talks about the last episode of The Pink Opaque. He actually goes back later on and he watches the VHS of it. And in the last episode, the two characters meet up again. But when Isabel goes to approach Tara, it's really not Tara. Tara was kidnapped by Mr. Melancholy and her heart was cut out and she was gagged and tied up and buried alive. And then, in probably the scariest sequence in the movie, Isabel is also tied up, and we see Mr. Melancholy, and he's like this. Just the effect of him is this like moon face that's constantly like a dream, like kind of like it doesn't stay still. It's constantly moving and morphing and stuff. And he gives the Luna juice to knock her out, and cuts her heart out, and buries her underground. That's the supposed last episode of the show, and then it got canceled. So there was no season six.
God, imagine that though. Imagine
Imagine, right.
like watching a kid show that ends on a cliffhanger like that.
Right. But it's so
Brutal.
brutal. How could that be? So when she goes back, she says, like, I realized that I, she says, I paid some stoner who I knew who liked me to bury me alive. And first I pissed myself and shit myself and I got terrified and I was scared, and then I clawed out and I was Tara and I was in the other world, and I was in season six, which is so interesting because she still doesn't refer to it as like the real world. It's the real world is the TV show. She says I'm in season six, but what she says is so interesting because she says like when I was Tara, it was like waking up. And my life as Maddie was just this dream, and it was very quickly like fading from my memory the way a dream does. And I found that very evocative, the idea of like imagine your whole existence fading the way a dream fades when you wake up.
Yeah, that was, and also the brutality of burying myself. So it wasn't like just the monsters were doing that, like in the show, but it was I had to bury who I was
Yeah.
to come out of the grave and be the person I need to be, which was Tara.
What do you think
And
about that though? Because, like, with gay people, there's this figurative concept of the closet, right? And that you would be in the closet and then you come out of the closet. And that becomes a visual metaphor in many great films and stuff. But in this film, the way that Maddie, like, finds her true self is by being buried alive.
I
Or is
took it
she wrong?
as,
Is that not the way to do it? Is the way to do it a different way, like opening your chest like he does at the end?
so I took it as burying yourself is a play on the trope bury your gaze.
Okay.
Bury your gaze is a trope that means when gay writers are writing about queer characters but couldn't be open about it, they kind of hid that sort of symbolism and motifs.
Early on, you would have these queer-coded characters, but often they would die.
And this is the reverse of that. It's like to live, you have to kill off the straight version of yourself or the
Okay.
not real version of yourself. That's what
Oh,
I thought it was.
okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
And what's interesting is that they go to, so Maddie convinces Owen to go back to the high school. And I thought that was, that's why it made me think that she wasn't real, is because the last time Owen was as close to Isabel as possible was in high school. That's why I was like, this is why, how could they get into the high
Interesting.
school? And they're in the parachute that was in the beginning, which has
Yes.
all the colors of the movie and also the trans flag colors. And they're projecting, and Maddie's telling Owen of the plans and what you have to do to be in the real world in
Yeah.
this like image. And
It's
then
a great
there's the,
monologue.
oh, it really is. And all the projections of the constellations and stuff
Yeah.
going around them. And then they go outside, they're on the football field, and there's a grave. And like the idea was like, Maddie's like, okay, now you have to bury yourself. And Owen again
Runs away.
gets runs away. Well, he tackles her
Yeah.
actually. It's the one point of like actual person on person violence that we see in this movie.
Yeah.
And that's not even super violent because she gets up, but
Yeah.
he tackles her to stop her, to shut her up, and then runs away.
Yeah.
And I was what I was thinking of that is this is a little different, but I had a friend who was in a long-term abusive relationship. And what being and it wasn't physically abusive, but it was mentally and emotionally. And a after that relationship, right, where my friend had to suppress themselves and had to adapt the behavior and the style of their abuser, then when that relationship ended and they finally left, what did they do is they returned to what they remember they used to like. They started eating the foods that they ate that they didn't eat when they were in the relationship with this person, but ate like 10 years ago, right? Then they started watching movies again. They stopped watching movies because their abuser didn't like movies and didn't want them played. So they never watched movies in like 10 years. Then they
Wow.
went back to watching movies. Then they were listening to music that they were listening to that 10 years ago, right? And the reason why I bring that up is because Owen is never shown as being, even though his father is frightening, we
Yeah.
don't see any physical violence. We don't even see verbal abuse. There's
No.
just silence. And I,
Yes. There's
but,
that
oh,
great, yeah.
yeah, but there's that adaptation of that lifestyle living in suburbia, which Owen does. Owen inherits the
Yeah.
house and lives in it and works those shit jobs. And there's also that death. There's something about suburbia that's like a death for queer
Yeah.
people. And I that the reason that's why I made that equation of like Owen was so terrified of the unreal or the possible that he forced himself into this mold.
Okay.
And that's why I thought like the high school was interesting. It's like he had to go back to high school to who he was very briefly, being very close to the person that he needs to be,
Right.
and then again chose not to. And then he says in the narration, I never saw Maddie again.
Yeah.
We never see the high school again after that. And that's when he tries to watch The Pink Opaque on streaming when it comes out.
And right. And I think it's thinking about analog and digital, the idea that watching it later on streaming and it's like he has no connection to it is so interesting. Like you need the analog. A couple things I want to touch on. It begins with that idea of the parachute. Like, I don't know if you ever did that in class. Like, I remember doing that in gym class. You'd have a parachute and you'd all like flip it up together and then you could like run around. And I forgot about the weird, very, very, very temporary liminal space that gets created when you flip the parachute up and it's like this colorful dome and this colorful little existence that you as a little kid want to live in, but it literally only it lasts 10 seconds. And then that's brought up again when Maddie brings him to the high school and she's like in this like tent talking to him, trying to convince him. The other thing I want to say is you talk about the silence with the dad. There's a really scary image of the dad. He comes home and he's like, oh, sorry I'm late, dad. And then the dad just looks at him, and everything's dark, but the dad is illuminated by the glow of the TV, which there's many shots like this. This movie is very low key lighting, but then there's like bright like TV images. And the father has like I guess a mustache. It's hard to see, but the father just looks at him, and he looks like Mr. Melancholy. The father just looks at him, and it's just a scary. It lingers so long, and it's just such an uneasy, creepy image. And then later on, he freaks out, and the father runs downstairs, and he finds him with his Owen's head is in the TV, and the TV's sparking. And then Owen goes, and he brings Owen to the shower, and like puts Owen under the water. And then Owen's screaming like, "This isn't my life. You're not my father." And he starts throwing up TV, like TV light comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, how did you read that?
Well, I like I said, I really literally believe Maddie. So I when he has those moments where he freaks out and he's like, "You're not my dad." I feel like he's almost there. He's getting to that point where he needs to get to be like, "This isn't real," but he always chickens out. And it's
I took it as a suicide attempt.
okay.
I think like the movie was showing us this visceral, terrifying image, and the father was pulling him back into this reality. Like, I think that Owen was trying to kill himself.
It's so interesting. You are reading this film as much more metaphorical, not even counting the level of metaphor of gender dysphoria. Just literally what we're seeing is metaphorical. Where I'm totally buying the surface of what we're seeing. It's really interesting. Well, I didn't think of it. Yeah, it's absolutely. Especially like bringing him in the shower and putting the hot water on or the cold water on him. That's something you might do if somebody takes pills and you're trying to like not let them fall asleep. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, that's interesting too, because it's almost like if we take it from your reading, right? Then it's like if Narnia exists, but the characters never go there, and you just hear
Yes.
about it and you see snippets of it, but you never actually, us as the audience, never gets to experience that,
Or
and
they
that.
do go there because in this, if you take it literally, their world, even though it's mundane and seems realistic, that's the fake world. The real world is the pink opaque. They really are the characters. It's like I think something like so I maybe I'm misremembering. I think something similar to this happens in Twin Peaks: The Return, where like he goes into like the real world or whatever. Agent Cooper, I don't remember.
That was weird. Yeah, so it's like, okay, I know what you're talking. You mean when he found the woman that looks exactly like older Laura Palmer and tries to
Right.
bring her to the Twin Peaks world, and it's like,
Right. And
doesn't
then
work.
he goes to the house and he rings the bell and the person answers the door. And then we found out later on that the person who answers the door was the actual owner of the house. Lynch actually cast the real woman who lived in the house. So it's like this is reality. Like he went from Twin Peaks into reality, and but then Twin Peaks breaks through. I don't know. That's a whole nother episode of this podcast. Anyway, we didn't talk about. There's a scene earlier on before Maddie comes back where he's driving. Owen's driving and he sees like a downed power line that's like sparking and moving around. But then he walks up to it and there's like a big sinkhole in the street, but there's light coming out of it. And he finds on the ground pages of the Pink Opaque episode
Episode
guide.
guide. That was weird because if
Yeah.
you notice, the episode guide had the ice cream man image, but from the original viewing of it, not the later
The really
cheesy
scary
version,
looking
the
one.
scary one. And so, again, that kind of brings me back to like, is this really happening or is this Owen's brain?
Yeah. Yeah. So good. At the end, it cuts to after he knocks down Maddie, it cuts to 20 years later, which is crazy. And he just looks like a young guy dressed like an old guy. And he says, "My father died, but I stayed in the house." You see, he buys a flat screen TV. They make a big deal out of he buys a flat screen TV and he brings it into the house. And then he says, and I forgot this from the first time I watched it. He says, "I have a wife and kids, and I love them so much. They're my whole world." But he has no expression on his face when he says it, and we never see the wife and kids.
And we only see him watching television. So it's like he also in that same like image when he got the TV or the phrasing, he talks about it's time to be a man now and to let that go. And it's like you're saying that because you're adopting the mindset of your dead dad. Because the dad dies off, you know, the parents die off screen. And we don't get those instances of tragedy or at all, which I thought was interesting. It's like the only tragedy is the lived existence of Owen and not the loss necessarily.
Well, at the very end, which we're coming to, when he has another freak out, he screams mom or mommy. So it feels like that pain he's holding on to. But we see that he works at like the fun center, which is like a Chuck E. Cheese or Dave and Buster's, and he looks like this old man. His face is sunken in and his lips are all chapped. Which could also mean he's suffocating underground. He really is Isabel in the ground, and he as he the older he gets, the more he's getting close to suffocating and dying, because also, as we said, he has asthma, so he throughout the movie he's wheezing a lot, and he's wheezing more as he gets older. But then we see it's like a kid's birthday party, and Connor O'Malley's there, but Connor O'Malley's not old; he's the exact same age he was before, which is very weird. And they're singing happy birthday, and just out of nowhere, oh no, then Connor O'Malley's like, let's sing it again, and they start singing happy birthday again, and then old Owen just starts screaming, and everyone in the room stops and their heads hang down like a dream, like they just that reality just stops for a second, and that's when he screams mommy, and it's like he has a moment of realizing I'm not in the real world. Oh my God, I'm choking and dying. And then we see him in the bathroom, and Connor O'Malley's outside. And he's like, "Hey, buddy, were you everything okay in there?" And he's got his shirt off, and he takes a box cutter. And this felt very much like Videodrome. He cuts his chest open, and he goes to the mirror, and he opens his chest, and out of his chest comes TV light, and he looks happy for like a moment. And then the next thing we see is he's putting his shirt back on and he's going outside and he's walking around the fun center apologizing to everyone in the party, but no one looks at him or gives a shit. He's just apologizing to no one. He's like, I'm so sorry about what happened. I'm on a new medicine and I was just getting used to it. Oh, I'm so sorry. And that's how it ends. It's a super tragic, sad ending.
Yeah, that was such a it heartbreaking. It's a truly heartbreaking movie. And the things that I really reflect on earlier in the episode, I said that the second time I watched it, I went with a bunch of trans people. And after the movie, we spent a little time talking about that. And like, what's the experience of being trans and seeing a movie like this, right? And they basically like the group basically told me, because I asked them, what did they think of that interpretation? Or this is like what happens when you don't transition. They were like, it's exactly like that. When you don't transition, you don't grow. And you're kind of stuck in this almost adolescent existence, where
Playing a
you
role.
playing the same role, but you're not
But you're
an adult.
suffocating.
Yeah, you're suffocating, but you're not. The thing is, it's kind of hard to describe, but you're basically, if you don't transition, and it's not even medically or surgically necessarily, but if you don't s transition mentally,
Right, you
emotionally,
don't
and
live your
socially,
true self.
yeah, if you're not yourself, if you're not accepting of yourself, what that does is it kind of stunts you. And I've known friends who later transition, so but like throughout their like teens to their 30s even. At some point, you stop growing mentally. Like you're just a regression. And I think that's what's happening in this movie. Like even though Owen looks old and his body's dying, essentially, like that's what we're seeing, he doesn't really grow up and he doesn't be a real person. He's a shadow of a person that kind of lives between realities. And it's fucking heartbreaking, man. It's a really bummer ending.
Why do you think that? Like, you could have had, you could honestly, you could have the last shot be him with his chest open and then just cut out the shot afterwards or the couple shots afterwards where he's going through apologizing. Why do you think? Is it because it's a horror movie and we're showing we want to horrify you? Like, why do you think the choice to not have him get there?
I think
Or
it
will
is
he ever
more.
get there and we don't see it?
No,
No,
I
he's
don't
never
think
gonna
he
get there.
will. No, because he never gr he the few times he does grow, he immediately takes it back in this movie. I think that's his narrative arc, is that because he doesn't grow, he doesn't get even a remote chance of a happy ending.
So he'll never have a moment like that again where he breaks through.
I don't think so. Or he might just honestly kill himself. I just can't imagine how you live like that for that long. It's
What a
it that's
bummer.
a bummer. I'm sorry. That is such a
No, it
bummer
is. It's a
statement.
bummer. I mean, it's a dark movie.
But
Although
I
I do
also
think it has humor and it's pretty.
yes. I think it's a really dense movie, and there's so much to pick apart here. But I really think it's like it goes back to that psychological horror of like, this is what happens if you don't make the choices you need to.
Yeah. Or you, this is what happens if you don't accept who you are or be who you are.
Yeah, because and I think back to Maddie's like really great monologue of just that, not just running away, but literally burying herself and having to claw
Yeah.
out and be real. Like that was a brutal telling of this is how you become yourself. Is it's a lot of work and it's painful. There's also like this thing that's interesting about the movie is like at first when I first watched this, I thought the parents would be the barriers or it would be society. But throughout this movie, Owen keeps aging and the barriers go away. But he's
Yes.
still making those choices. So it's almost like the movie's telling us it's really up to you. You're the
Right.
barrier, not everyone else.
But it also shows the sort of subtle violence of just patriarchy, right? Like his dad's not abusive, his dad's not a bad guy, but his dad just goes, "Oh, isn't that a show for girls?" And something like that could kill a little kid. You know what I mean?
The thing is like he's not saying it in a way of questioning. It's more like I'm going to say this so that you feel ashamed of
Right,
even suggesting
it's
it.
policing. It's the kind of normative policing that parents often do.
Yeah, it was so, it was interesting the Maddie and Owen's like they actually kind of trauma bond in a way where like
Yeah.
Maddie's mom is, she makes this comment about her mom doesn't give a shit at what she does, so that's why
Yeah.
she's up late. But her stepfather is physically abusive.
Yeah.
Whereas Owen, his mother doesn't really, she tries to connect with him, but the biggest, they're both terrified of his father. But his father
Yeah.
doesn't actually physically do anything, but he keeps this presence
Yes.
of, and t of total control. Like Owen is in high school and has a bedtime,
Yeah.
right? Like, it's
But
so scary.
you just reminded me of something, which is in the last scene we see his mother, they're at like a carnival and they're like sitting in front of a haunted house. It's very interesting visuals. And the mother looks right down the barrel, right into the camera, right into us, the audience. Do you remember that shot where she looks
Yeah.
right at us? It's like we the audience is being seen. And it makes me think if the mother hadn't died, maybe Owen would have gotten there. Because maybe the mother would have been someone that he could come out to, and he clearly was very, very close to the mother, and the mother must know that her kid is queer in some way.
Honestly, I think all parents know subconsciously, and at times, I'm not saying everyone, but there are parents who try to subjugate or push it or shame it in ways without directly confronting it.
I don't
And
think
it's
the
in
mother would have done that, though. The father's doing that, but I think the mother wouldn't have.
I don't think so either, but I also think in the very few scenes we have with her, she's someone who can't grow either because she's in this horrible relationship.
I see. Yes.
So maybe at some point in the future she could have been someone, but only if the father dies and they both
Yeah.
learn how to be themselves without that presence. But again, that's just pure speculation. You also notice in that scene at the carnival, Owen is eating blue cotton candy, which I feel like is a very deliberate choice, and is also wearing all blues, which
Yes.
is that's the colors again of like him hiding.
Yes. And he does something really interesting, which is he spits onto the cotton candy, and we see his spit like burrow through it, which is what happens because cotton candy, when any moisture hits it, it disappears. I want to tell you what I think happens to Maddie.
Okay.
Because as I said, I read the film as very literal. So I think that the reason Maddie comes back is because the Pink Opaque, they have to both live. And I think when Owen pushes her down and runs away, I don't know what happens to her in that moment, but I think Tara underground suffocates and dies because Tara can't live without Isabel living. So I think he dooms her by running away.
Okay.
Because remember, Isabel is also timid. Like in the very beginning, when we see Maddie and Owen talking about the show, they're talking about the characters, and Maddie says, like, Isabel's a bit of a drip, but Tara's really cool. And it's like that's him.
That's funny. I don't want to like I'm not trying to totally take apart
No,
your
go ahead.
interpretation, but one thing I'm curious about is like if the show was real, then what did we see when Owen was watching the Netflix streaming of the Pickle Pig and everything is completely different and the characters are a lot younger and they're very corny? Like so
I
like
right,
I
right,
had the captions on max, right? Just so I can capture some of the
right.
dialogue that I missed. But one thing it's what the caption said when that little girl with the braces is talking. Well, why don't you serve soup so that we can see you all year, Ice Cream Man? And
Right.
it literally says Sarah Tara speaking or Tara saying that. So that girl with the braces was Tara.
Right. Okay, if there's a literal reading of that, it's that as time goes on and he becomes less, he's more and more suffocating and he gets older and less close to the surface of doing something, now the show doesn't even look like the real world to him.
Oh,
But I should
okay.
also say, like, when I say
Interesting.
literal, I still don't mean literal. It's not a realistic movie. You know what I mean? Like, it's working on this fantastical level.
Right, we're talking
It's
about
both figurative and
literal.
literal at the same time.
Yeah, we're talking about like the literal or the realness of the show that it takes place in a fantastical world. So it's like
Right.
the reality of fantasy.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. That's No, but that's an interesting read too, of like then he loses Tara forever, like literally, tackling her, but also figuratively because the show he can't connect with her anymore.
Because
Interesting.
if she needs him too, I think.
Yeah, they need each other to
Yeah.
live in reality or the
Right.
reality of the Pinkle Pig.
Right. But in the show within the movie, they talk about how they only met in the pilot. So they're like a team, but they also aren't together.
Well, they're not together like physically, but they're together in the psychic plane. And I kind of took that as how queer people communicate with each other.
Okay.
So, like, I thought of like when I think of pink, I did think of literal like signaling of like using pink or lavender where gay men would signal to each other by maybe having like a flower or a lapel that's purple or pink. So, like, he's gay too. And you guys can communicate. So that's
Right.
kind of how I took the pink and the constant pink of, and in the show they could communicate really as themselves and as queer people, as opposed to the reality where what we've seen and we talked about earlier is like they couldn't even face each other most of the time, and they weren't looking at each other when they spoke.
Yeah. I'm looking at my notes now, and something I noticed the second time I watched it. There's a scene when we cut to 20 years later, we're in the fun zone or whatever the fuck it's called, and we see this game where this little kid is in this booth, and there's these dollar bills floating around, and he tries to like capture as many as he can. But if you look on the top of the booth, there's a little LED strip, and the strip says, "You are dying right now."
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah.
I also saw that like, and they show you deliberately in the arcade is like they have games based on the show.
Yes, yeah.
Like it was a throwback. Like they had so I've been to arcades kind of recently, and there's these new games where you sit in chairs and you have these like guns and you shoot and you're basically playing Oh my God, what was that game from the 80s with the aliens coming down? You had to shoot them before they landed on Earth. Do you know what I'm talking
Space
about?
Invaders.
Yeah, it's Space Invaders, but in the movie it was Mr. Melancholy and you're shooting at the moon.
Yes, I did see that. Yeah.
And yeah, and then they cut to another arcade cabinet and it had the two henchmen, the Luna henchmen on it too. So
Yeah.
it's kind of like in this reality it's nostalgia. So but it's a layer away from reality because nostalgia always looks better than what it you know when you From what you
Right.
remember than what you
Right.
actually see.
Right. Yes, exactly. Right. At some point,
Oh,
they're
yeah.
gonna reboot the Pink Opaque, and he's gonna go online and talk about how he hates it and how it ruined his childhood. He's become a neckbeard.
God.
Well, is there anything else you want to say about this great film?
Oh, man.
I feel like we really got into it.
We really did. We really, it's a really dense movie with so much like in there visually. But I did have a question more about
Yeah.
so one thing is like I use Letterboxd and I write my reviews in there, usually
Sure.
brief ones, but I'm using it similar to Goodreads of just tracking when I watch movies and when I
Yeah.
watch. And a lot of Letterboxd reviews are negative and people say it's really corny. Like I saw people go, it's a corny movie and it's
Really?
embarrassing or cringy. Yeah, and I was trying to figure that out and I think that this movie that we've seen really speaks to our generation as millennials and anything after that, so much is lost.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm looking it up on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's got an 84% fresh, but it's got a 71% audience score. So the audience score is not as positive as the viewer score. I'm looking at some of the negative stuff. That's, I do think, but I don't know, like part of me is like, yes, we can understand it in a way that they can't, but a lot of this analog stuff is young people. Like you see young people like interested in these things, and it's like people in the 70s who were super into the 50s. Like, you know what I mean? Like people, like you'll see it, like a young kid being like, I wish I lived in the 80s, like Stranger Things. And it's like the 80s was pretty terrible. Like like I don't know. I think I feel like you could have nostalgia in a cultural sense for something you weren't even there for.
Well, how I am interpreting those negative reviews is more like it's too close. So, like, when you're talking about that nostalgia, it's multiple decades, right? So, I
Yeah.
feel like I Saw the TV Glow might speak more to future audiences, like younger than the Gen Z right now. Because right now, like,
Yeah.
imagine watch it being in 1995 and seeing a movie or a television show or clothing from 1985.
Yeah.
Like that would be outdated and embarrassing.
Yeah. I see
But
what you mean.
seeing 85 clothing in 2000, 2010, that's where the nostalgia hits. Like it has to be a certain
Yes,
distance apart.
I see what you mean.
So that's one thing. The second is there are more trans and queer characters than there ever have been, and very upfront and very story like the real, their stories, right? In a way that we haven't seen before. So like that looking at a TV show and projecting yourself on it and really
Yeah.
identifying with the character, that's something that doesn't exist right now for Gen Z
I
because
see what you mean.
they get
Because they actually
literal.
have representation.
They have representation. They're not longing where like you and
Yeah.
I. And I know you're not queer necessarily, Mike, but it's like you and I understand that alienation, that longing of
Sure, yeah.
looking to characters
I mean,
for.
that's what this podcast is about, pop culture and how fandom and stuff generates meaning in your life, especially if you're like, you were a sad little kid or whatever.
Right.
I think you're absolutely right in your reading, but I might add something less charitable, which is I think that this is a queer movie, and I think we live in a bigoted country where
Okay.
people will give it a bad fucking rating because they don't like seeing something. They'd rather go watch a fucking Marvel movie.
I think there's that too. But I also like I've seen reviews from people who are like, "Yeah, I'm trans and this was cringy." Of like, "Well, of course, because you were trans at 14 years old, where fucking I Am Jazz was playing on
Yeah.
television. Like, you saw someone's real life unfold,
Right.
trans life unfold."
It's yeah. It's interesting to
So.
say cringy because that means like you see yourself in it and it embarrasses you.
Well, I took it more as cringy, as in like you're watching someone else do something embarrassing. Like watching episodes of The Office where like you're not necessarily identifying with these people, but the way they're acting is so embarrassing. Do you know what I mean? So
Yeah,
I kind of
I
I
get it.
think
I
of
guess I
it
get it. I mean, the performances are very stylized and very stilted in a very particular way that I think works for the piece. Maybe that's what people are having a negative reaction to.
I also think this movie is very nostalgic for 90s, and we're getting there now, but it's still a kind of weird place, you know? And all that stuff that you were bringing up about like seeing all the VHS, like the sounds and the scratches and the glow of the TV, like that stuff, if people never watched VHS or those CRTVs, you're not gonna catch that.
Yeah. Well, this is one of these films that I feel like no matter how it's received now, if it gets remembered, it'll only be cherished more and more.
Oh, it's great. I think it's a movie that, I mean, we're speaking to the future, but I think it's a movie that could age really well, and that
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Nadia, I think we did
we did it.
it. Thank you so much for being here and talking about I Saw the TV Glow. How's 2020? What are you looking forward to for 2025?
Oh man, I think the only thing I'm looking forward to is like better movies and television. That's really we're gonna need that kind of escapism, I think, of like of media. And I'm looking forward to we're finally at that stage where Marvel movies don't have a vice grip on
Yes, I agree. Like it's not every weekend anymore. It's a lot, but it's still not it's not complete. We're seeing comedies and dramas and other things make their way to the theaters again, which is good.
Thank God, man.
Well, Nadia, thank you so much for being here. We end
Thanks.
every episode. Oh no, please thank me. Thank me profusely.
Yeah, I was just saying thank you. This was a lot of fun.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. We end every episode by saying,
Go bye-bye.